Ask the Coaches. So today we have four questions for another episode of Ask the Coaches. These came in through our Instagram account. Within the last couple of weeks, we posted a question box and you guys put what some questions were that you guys have. And the first one that came in was about overtraining. How can you recover and salvage your race if you find that you are overtraining? So there's a few variables involved in this question. We'll do a deep dive as to what overtraining is and if and how you can salvage a training cycle if you have overtrained. The next question is, how can you run during the first trimester of pregnancy? So we have recently gotten quite a few more pregnancy-related questions, which we are going to do another in-depth episode about running during pregnancy here coming up. So I will just give some quick tips for running during the first trimester here. The first trimester of pregnancy, for those who are maybe pregnancies in your future or whatnot, there are a lot of symptoms that pop up that are not typically around the remainder of pregnancy. So it can be a big struggle in the first trimester, which you wouldn't necessarily expect because you're not really showing, and it's so early in pregnancy. And so sometimes people are really surprised at like how hard it hits those first couple of weeks of pregnancy. The third question is it possible to run too slow on your easy days? So if you guys follow a lot of our content online, we promote slowing down on your easy days. And what that encompasses is 80% of your mileage is going to be at least 2 minutes per mile slower than your 5K pace. But you can go upwards of like 5 minutes per mile slower than your 5K pace, even slower sometimes. This question wants to know, is it possible to go too slow on easy days? So it kind of seems like it's a fear-based question. This person is a little concerned that maybe they're going too slow on their easy days. So we're going to talk about if that's possible, which it probably is if you're an elite athlete or training at a very high level. But for most runners, especially the recreational and even competitive athletes, I have never seen this happen throughout the thousands of people that I've coached over the last decade. And then the fourth question is, how much time should you space between 5Ks or half marathons? So I think in terms of, you know, a calendar year, we'll just go over how many half marathons should you be doing, how many 5Ks should you be doing. And we'll talk a little bit about the difference between an A race and a B race and what that might entail. And then how you can really peak for one specific event. So getting back to that first question, it was about overtraining and how can you recover from overtraining and salvage a race. So overtraining is a wide topic, right? I mean, there is no concrete like diagnosis that you can like go to the doctor and they'd be like, you are overtraining. I find that it is typically the athletes who are pretty durable who will lead into this overtraining. Because if you're someone that is injury prone, like let's say you get a lot of flare-ups, you're probably not going to be able to get to a place where you're like overtraining. Your body might stop you before then. So for some people, injuries might be more of the issue that they need to watch out for. And so that's maybe a different topic and a different answer that I would give there. But for people who are injury prone, I would say just being really preventative with your approach to the training cycle. So if in the past you have gotten injured, I would say let's be really conservative with the mileage, maybe attempt running every other day. I really would need to know more about the person's background and what they were doing during the training cycles where they were getting injured. And we would want to like back off what they were doing then. I would also like that person to be in physical therapy or going to see a PT, even if just for preventative measures. You do not need to wait until you are quote unquote injured and quote unquote unable to run to see someone who specializes in running related injuries, because running related injuries oftentimes will reoccur or they will morph into something else. Because if you don't address what it is that caused it, there are often imbalances in the body that will cause something else to flare up. And so in my experience, I think it's really important to kind of get ahead of that game and go in before something flares up and always almost be under the guide of someone who can help recommend exercises to do or help keep things at bay that maybe you're not necessarily aware of. So I think that's really key there. But maybe going more towards that overtraining spectrum. How does one get to a place of overtraining is a really good question and a good place to kind of start things off. Like, what are some symptoms of overtraining, Jason?
Yeah, I really like, first of all, how you preface this by splitting them into the two camps, right? Because when we think about, you know, you could be overtrained on the injury side, right, where you're physically just not able to run anymore. And then now we're going to talk more about, like, if you have that feeling of, like, burnout, right, or you're feeling really tired in the middle of your training cycle. And so I guess this could happen at any point during the marathon cycle. It could happen right during peak week. It could happen like 6 weeks or 2 months out from your marathon. So depending on when it happens and also the distance you're training for, you know, if it's during a half training cycle, you know, that's possible as well. So, you know, the answer is going to, how we handle this will depend on the number of weeks that are left in your training, what you've been currently doing for mileage, and sort of your experience and your history with racing as well. But some of those signs are going to be just feeling lethargic or like not looking forward to your runs anymore, having them feel more difficult than they should be, especially for like an easy recovery run, or not being able to hit your workouts, your paces during workouts. But that's really the main symptoms. It's just feeling more tired than usual, right? And so you have to dial in on many, many things during this time with nutrition and sleep, and maybe just back off. So that's sort of how I would approach, you know, salvaging the training cycle. You know, I had a somewhat recent example of someone that decided to test their marathon time during the training run, right? It was supposed to be like a longer training run, and they ended up doing all 26 miles. And so we had to figure out, how do we pivot from here so that they didn't leave their race in that training run, right? So obviously I didn't get to have them finish the next few weeks the same way I would have. So we had to sort of take out a few workouts, run a little bit less mileage, that sort of thing. So the answer is really a complicated question, but you know, I would say with incorporating more rest, figuring out how to get the effort back to where it normally is for you in a place where things are going well, that's really what we want to have happen.
Definitely. I think there are different levels to burnout and overtraining. I think there is, like, on a macro scale, someone who has overtrained over the course of months, years even. And then I think there's, like, a micro level where we're in a training cycle. We've otherwise been pretty good, pretty healthy. We've done all of the things right. Like, we take rest days. We have taken off seasons. We respect our body. Like, we're kind of following all the rules of training. And if you feel like you're falling in that category, like, you take your easy days easy. So are you going 2 to 4 minutes per mile slower than your 5K pace for 80% of your mileage at least? Are you making sure you're not increasing your mileage too much too quickly? Are you making sure that your long runs aren't increasing too much? Are you doing your long runs at easy pace? If you're checking all of these boxes, and you've given yourself off seasons where you're not doing workouts, you've taken time off after your last marathon, you're not doing multiple marathons within a year, you're not expecting to run either half or full marathon PRs every 4 to 6 months for years on end. Like, if you're not doing those things, you're probably on a micro level going to be able to, quote unquote, like, bounce back from a minor burnout. And so what that might look like is, you started a training cycle for your marathon. Maybe you started, it's a 16-week training plan, and all of a sudden you're in week 8, you're halfway through, and you're like, wow, I cannot sustain this. What I would recommend in this case, if you followed all of the rules before then, and all of a sudden you're just having a week or 4 weeks where you're like, this seems like it's too much, some symptoms of this would be elevated resting heart rate that is not coming down. Mm-hmm. So if you're a female and you're in your reproductive years, you have a monthly cycle, and so your heart rate will vary from month to month. But if you have noticed that in both, like, your follicular and your luteal phase, that your heart rate is still elevated, like, it's not coming back down, you might take that as a flag of, like, okay, my heart rate is more elevated than usual. And if you're a male, checking that heart rate data and seeing, okay, my heart rate's been elevated beyond what it normally is. And so that's why I think it's nice to have a Garmin or an Apple Watch, because it does track that metric. And so if you're curious about this, really keep an eye on, what is my resting heart rate? What is everything looking like? Maybe you're also experiencing some insomnia, maybe you're just experiencing like really flat legs in your workouts, even if it's just like a mental thing where you're like, this just seems like too much volume. Even if you're 8 weeks out from your marathon, that's totally, I think, salvageable. And what I would recommend doing in that case is cutting that volume. So even doing a cut in volume of like 20 to 30%, that's going to really help you feel a lot better. Maybe we either cut down the volume of some of the workouts. So we might be doing 90% of our mileage as easy runs and 10% as workout days, or we're going to space out our workouts. So even for me personally, I cannot do within a training cycle, I need at least three days of full recovery, easy running or rest days in between hard workouts. And I know some people that'll do just 2 days or sometimes even one day. And so you might find that in certain training cycles, you might need more like 4 days of recovery in between. And so that might mean shifting some things around. So ways that you can salvage it, again, would be cutting that mileage by, I would probably do 30% for the remainder of the training cycle. I would also make sure that we're not doing too many long runs over that 2.5 hour mark. Even if you do have a marathon coming up and your longest run was going to be 3 hours, let's just take that off the table for now. We don't really need to worry about that. Maybe in 4 weeks you'll feel better. You can do that. But let's just cut back those long runs as well. So cutting all of our long runs by like 20%. And then cutting some of our workout volume. So instead of doing 20% of our weekly mileage at those faster paces, we're going to do something like 10%. And that could look like spacing our workouts out by 4 to 6 days in between. So you'd really only have one workout a week most weeks. Or it could look like having shorter sessions. So instead of doing like 6 by 1 mile repeats, maybe we're doing 3 or 4 by 1 mile repeats. There's a couple ways that you can do that. There's another type of overtraining I want to talk about, because the overtraining that I just addressed is a pretty simple, quick fix. And yes, you typically can salvage that. If it's something that came on quickly, you notice it right away within the first like month, it's usually something you can bounce back from, rebound from. There's a second type of overtraining that occurs, I think, in individuals who have been really beating themselves into the ground over the course of longer than a year, longer than 6 months at a time. I've definitely been there. Looking back between the years of, I think, 2013 to 2016, somewhere in there, I think I did like 12 marathons in a 2.5 year period. And my times, that first year and a half to 18 months of like grinding and stuff, they actually got better. And so that's where it started to get confusing, was that I was improving, but then there started to be that decline. And so that's usually what all of these things have in common. You do see there is this increase in performance, typically training a certain way because you're increasing the stress. But what I was lacking and what I see happen a lot in the running community is that people will not take their off season seriously. They will continue to try to do multiple marathons per year. They're just not giving their body rest on that macro level. They keep thinking that if they increase the load, that they're going to continue to see increased results, and it doesn't always work that way. The same way that it wouldn't work for me to go out right now and run 100 mile weeks and expect to be a 230 marathoner, that's just not really how human physiology works. You really have to build up that mileage. It's not like just because you run this many miles per week, you're going to see these results. It really doesn't work like that, unfortunately. And I oftentimes see people get caught in that trap of, I just need to do more, I just need to do more. Because at some point, your body is going to reach that tipping point. And that's what happened to me, is my marathon times slowly started to get just a little bit slower. And then all of a sudden, there I was a year and a half later, and I was running times that were probably, I don't know, 15 minutes in the marathon slower than what my PR was. And it was really frustrating because I was working just as hard and I didn't understand why this was happening. And of course it was overtraining. I didn't feel like it was overtraining at the time, right? Because when you are in that limited mindset and you don't have an outsider giving you feedback, looking at your training and keeping you honest, you can kind of be blind because you're like, well, I did this all, you know, 2 years ago and I was totally fine. It's like, yeah, but there's probably something that you're not seeing. And that's why I think getting an outsider's perspective is so important. And even during that time, I was an RRCA certified coach and all of these things. So just because you have like a certain certification doesn't necessarily mean that you are, you know, going to be perfect at these things. And sometimes it does help to have someone else looking at your training and being like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Mm-hmm. When was the last time you had an off season? When was the last time we really dialed your mileage back down? And really challenging the viewpoints on your own training, because I think sometimes, even though we know the rules, sometimes we think we can like stretch them. So if you're in that camp, unfortunately, what I would recommend is really just taking 6 to 12 months of like not racing, not doing workouts, and just kind of finding the joy back in running. Most people who are listening and they're in that camp, they're not going to do that just because that's really hard advice to follow. But if you do that, you're going to rebound and you're going to feel so much better. You're going to get back to that place where you actually feel like you're improving. You actually feel hungry to do workouts. Your legs don't feel like lead. Things just get a lot better when you give your body rest, because it can grind for a long time, but eventually it's just going to stop giving you the results that you're looking for. And in order to get back to that place where you're making improvements, you do need to have the rest portion of training, because as we all know, the equation is stress plus rest equals growth. So if you're only giving your body stress and you're not giving it enough rest to recover and rebuild, you're just digging yourself into a hole. And so in order to get out of that hole that you've been digging yourself in over the last year, 2 years, 3 years, however long, it's going to take months of rest to really let your body reset. And if you're really young, maybe you can rebound out of that sooner. But I have seen, unfortunately, I mean, we've seen people who are even in high school, they move up to do like a marathon when they're in high school. They run like, what, 240 out of their mind? Yeah. Then you never hear about them again. So it's unfortunate. It does happen in the running community. Overtraining happens all the time. And unfortunately, sometimes people just never even recover from it because it is that hard to recover from, because it literally takes an entire shift of like your mindset, your approach, and it is just so challenging to go from grinder, grinder, grinder to having like a quote unquote healthy relationship with running that a lot of people just struggle. And so it's either an all or nothing mindset.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. I was thinking the same thing about how, you know, some people are aware of their overtraining, but I think the camp that it might affect the worst is the people that have been in this state of like continuous back-to-back macro cycles of like marathoning, and it's really maybe difficult for them to recognize that they're in this state of overtraining. Maybe they're just slightly over the line there for year after year, and so they maybe don't recognize it. And sometimes it will take an event or some sort of injury that will force them to take the time off, right? But if you can recognize it and maybe, like you said, take some time off, just change your approach, do something different. If you commit to that, it's going to pay off for you in the long run. And so we've seen a few people that have had weird things happen, like health scares because of that. It's difficult when you're online because you see a lot of people and their lives are so different, but it's definitely a loaded topic. I know we've been talking about this one question already this long, but the other thing too is just like the season of life you're in, that could be affecting the overtraining aspect. So make sure you're fully aware of that, trying to, you know, limit stress from other factors as well, because that can go a long way in helping you not feel your best.
That's actually really interesting. When you said season of life, I almost find that when I was burning out kind of those years, 2015, 2016, I didn't like have kids or anything. So like, I think I had a little bit more free time to dedicate to running. And that's the irony of it, is it's like I had so much time to dedicate to my running. And that's where I almost like got into trouble, because I ran too much. I did too much. And so while it can be really tempting to think, if I just do more, I'm going to get better, we also have to remember that like rest and recovery is part of the process too. And so that's why sometimes I think people do get faster when they're like parents or once they have like a career, because you almost don't have as much time to mess up and overtrain. Right. It's like, so maybe if you're someone that used to be prone to overtraining, maybe parenthood or having a really busy career, that's actually a good thing for those individuals, because they just have too much time going on and they don't have enough time to quote unquote overtrain. I know that maybe sounds a little funny, but if you are someone that has that tendency, maybe the future is good for you, right? If you aren't in those seasons yet. So the next question, speaking of kids, yeah, it's how to run during the first trimester of pregnancy. So we're going to do another podcast that's more in depth on this. I'm going to keep this relatively short, just going over, The main symptoms during the first trimester are going to be fatigue and nausea, which those combinations of things, not great for runners because the nausea, it makes it hard to keep some food down. It makes it hard to eat. And if you're not fueling your body properly, well, there goes your running. But on top of that, you also have this, like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like this huge blanket of fatigue just like overwhelms you. It's almost like it feels like you don't really even get a sleep at night. I don't know. I've never been so tired in my life than in the first trimester of my pregnancies. And that makes it really hard to prioritize exercise, especially if you have a lot of other stuff going on. Maybe you have to wake up really early already for school, and just the thought of doing that, I mean, that's enough to exhaust you right there, right? Or school, for work, if you're like a teacher, right? I'm thinking of all the teachers that I coach who have to wake up and go to work at 6 o'clock, stand on their feet all day, all of those things. And also the fatigue can be worse because a lot of the times people are either reducing their caffeine intake because they say it's 200 milligrams of caffeine is the most you can use. And I know a lot of people who don't drink any caffeine because that's like their preference during pregnancy. And so, yeah, I mean, if you have like this huge wave of fatigue on you and you're not drinking any caffeine, it's just a tough situation to be in. And so I know a lot of people that run pretty minimally in the first trimester. I know some people, I've coached people who don't run at all the first 15 weeks. Then they kind of get back into things because they are hit so hard with these symptoms. So I think a lot of it is like symptom management. And maybe you're someone that doesn't really get a lot of symptoms. I felt pretty lucky with both of my children. When I was pregnant with them, I just didn't really I don't think my symptoms were that bad, because compared to what I was hearing other people say and how they like physically couldn't run, I felt pretty lucky. And so I think this is where it comes down to, like, don't compare to what other people are doing, because some people would look at what I did during the first trimester and be like, how the heck were you able to run, you know, pretty close to what you were running before in terms of mileage? But I guess like my nausea was never really that bad. And so it's hard not to play that comparison game. Some things that really did help in terms of these things is obviously resting, so prioritizing sleep, and then figuring out what time of day that nausea is hitting you the worst. It's kind of like all day symptoms for most people, but maybe you're someone who has really bad morning sickness in the morning, maybe try not running in the morning. If you are someone who feels like the nausea is coming a lot more at night, maybe see if you can get out for like a lunch run or something in the morning. And then also trying to prioritize what you're eating. So making sure you are eating something. I know that can be really challenging during the first trimester when you have a lot of food aversions and nausea. So eating small meals, just making sure you're getting something down, and then being smart about it, right? So if you are kind of on that fence where you are having a lot of nausea, you're not able to keep a lot of food down, I think running maybe isn't the best option in that case. Talking to your doctor about what your options are if you're really struggling with the nausea, vomiting situation, and then staying hydrated, all of those good things. One thing that also helped, I think when I was pregnant with Sage, my daughter, I had worse nausea then, but the one thing I would say to myself is just put your shoes on and go outside for like a five minute walk. And if that's all you can do, that's all you can do. And obviously, like, I was going out to go on a run, but I was like, if you can only get it 5-10 minutes of like run walking, then go home. If you don't, but I think for me, it was the hardest part was like getting out the door and starting the run. And then kind of once I got into it, I actually found that I felt a lot better. And like my nausea improved during the run, because at like those really low efforts, it just felt really good to get some fresh air, get out of the house. But the other thing I noticed was it was really important to refuel after the runs. And if I did overdo it on a run, like maybe I ran a little faster, or I did maybe a little bit more of a long run, my nausea would get worse later in the day. So making sure that you are fueling, because running does take a lot of energy, so make sure fueling is a huge priority. And so it's kind of balancing those two with the nausea and the fueling especially. So moving on to the next question. Oh, I love this one. Is it possible to run too slow on your easy days? So we recommend that everyone goes at least 2 minutes per mile slower than your 5K pace. I am someone who runs upwards of like 4 minutes per mile slower than my 5K pace at times. Like, because I just have running friends, and my mom, like, I run with my parents sometimes, And they go quite a bit slower than I do on easy days, but like I love going on runs with them because it's like it feels so good and I just love going that pace. So I'll be going upwards of 4 to 5 minutes per mile slower than my 5K pace. On those runs, my heart rate is still getting up into an aerobic zone. So the biggest issue that we would want to address with this question, I don't really see it applicable to many people, is your heart rate getting into an aerobic zone? So like zone one, is it at least getting into zone one, zone two? If it's not, then you're not really getting a benefit of doing a run, right? But what I'm seeing is most people, even if they're going on like a brisk walk, you might even find that your heart rate is elevated to be in zone one, zone two. I mean, in order to not have your heart rate in zone one, zone two, you have to be doing pretty minimal work. And I mean, is it possible? Yes, but I would think it would be someone more like a Kipchoge if he went out and was maybe going 14 minute pace, maybe his heart rate would be 100 and it wouldn't be high enough. But I think you'd have to be so fit for that to be the case, that I don't really think it's applicable. And that's why I don't really like to address this, because I think the level of fitness that you would have to be at in order to not get your heart rate at least to be like 110 beats per minute while running, you would have to have such amazing fitness that I don't think anyone listening to this podcast would be in that camp. Because I mean, what's the slowest you've gone? I mean, you've run with all sorts of people when you used to work at Lifetime. There was like no runner left behind, and so obviously it's not like it doesn't maybe feel like you're doing much,
right?
But if you have a chest strap and your heart rate is saying 110, 115, I mean, even sometimes when you're going on hikes, your heart rate's getting that high. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think with this one, you don't want to overthink it too much. You know, you want to, it's okay if you're going to go like 2 minutes per mile slower in your easy pace on occasion, right? Like, let's say you're joining a group or you're running with somebody. But if it's every run, it is something you want to start to figure out maybe why that is, or is it an effort thing? Try to, you know, really figure out what is your easy pace based on like a VDOT calculator. And, you know, like you said, you do run sometimes 3 to 4 minutes slower than your easy pace. But I'm sure there's also easy runs where you run, you know, 2 to 3 minutes slower. Right. So you have that sort of varied mixed in. And I think the day after like a workout or a long run, that's totally the right time to run slower, right? Like you might be recovering. I don't know. And so also there are certain factors, like if it's bad weather or you're maybe more stressed or there's hills or whatever that you, or it's way hot, right? Like down in the South, it's hot all summer. So you might be running just slower than what your VDOT says. And I think that's totally okay. So I wouldn't worry too much.
VDOT is like on the fast end. I always tell people, yeah, you can use VDOT, but that's a speed limit. Like that's the fastest you want to go. We don't want to go faster than that. Right. So definitely I think, So it could be a valid question. Like, am I going too slow on my easy days? Like someone could be genuinely concerned that like, hey, this doesn't really make a lot of sense. Like I run the same pace as all these people on race day. I follow them on Strava. I follow them on social media. And my paces are just not in alignment at all, ever, with them. Some other factors that you might want to look at, like if you feel like you can never even run that VDOT pace, like at all, ever, under any circumstance, like on off seasons, on days where you haven't had workouts in like 4 days, those sort of things, I would say let's maybe look at like how much are you running? Because if you're running like so much, maybe your legs are just completely trash. Like, are you training for an ultra? Because if you're training for an ultra, like it's like a different stride, almost like you are going at like a very, very slow pace. Are there other things going on in your life? Like, what is the stress looking like? Because in that case, it could be like an underlying thing. Because sometimes people will be like, I can't run my easy pace at all. And my heart rate, if I do, is like skyrocketed. And that's even if they're not doing any workouts. So I think sometimes when you're doing these hard workouts, that's when the next day your legs are so trashed that it's totally normal to be going way slower than your VDOT pace. Like maybe you're going 5 minutes per mile slower than 5K pace because you just did a 16-mile workout yesterday, you know? But then I think after 3 days after that workout, your easy run pace maybe closer to 2 minutes per mile, 3 minutes per mile slower than 5K pace. So it gets a little bit faster as your legs kind of rebound from that. But if you're finding that you're always flat, like you never have any energy on those easy days, maybe there's other alternatives that might be better. Maybe moving into some cross training, like if you're just feeling like it's not productive for you to be out there running, maybe it's let's reduce some of your mileage. Let's see what other options are, because there's definitely sometimes other things going on. So I would also look at, like, are you hitting your workout paces? Yeah. Do a time trial, make sure we're training at the right paces, all those good things. Then the last question is, how much time should you pace between racing 5Ks and half marathons? So I think in the past we've talked about you don't want to do more than 2 marathons a year. I think doing 2 marathons, I think doing a marathon every like 7 months is about like the max, right? Mm-hmm. We don't really want to be doing, you know, a marathon every 6 months indefinitely. That becomes very difficult. But this is more about 5K and half marathons. It really depends, right? So if you have a half marathons, I think, can be as difficult to train, race, execute as marathons to some extent. Like, you almost don't want to have too many half marathons in a year as well. So one every, you know, 6 to 7 months, I think, is also a good rule of thumb. You really only get like 2 athletic peaks per year. And so you don't want to expect that you're going to PR at all these events. Maybe if you're new to the sport of running, you're going to see that like hockey stick curve improvement, like you're going to improve in everything all the time. But then kind of once you flatten out, maybe you've been in the sport for 5 to 7 years, mm-hmm. those improvements become a little bit more challenging. And so the spacing becomes that much more important, because you can't just like knock out a PR every weekend. So I think doing a half marathon every 6 months if it's an A race. And then for 5Ks, I know we talked in the last Ask the Coaches episode about how you can do multiple 5Ks, and it's almost like beneficial to do them back to back, because the recovery from them only takes a few days, and it also helps to get that racing experience. Mm-hmm. When it comes to half marathons, only doing one A race every 6 months, I think it becomes really important to like vet out the course, make sure the course you're picking is a fast one, make sure the weather is going to be optimal, because you're only getting so many opportunities to race these things. You also want to taper. I think you can do a lot of B half marathons. So mm-hmm. if you are maybe in an off season, or you're just kind of looking for ways to have fun during the summer, I don't know. Everyone has different goals, right? Like, you could almost do a half marathon.
Stay motivated to get your long runs in.
Right. Yep. Well, like that Kurt Getzky guy, he mm-hmm. lives in Minnesota. He runs like 200 plus races a year. Key word is he runs them. And I do think he does some of them at hard efforts, like most of them. But a lot of them he does are like half marathons. And I think some people really enjoy the racing environment. Sometimes people just sign up for a lot of half marathons because they enjoy it. So like there's the half fanatics, where you can become a part of this club if you do so many half marathons within a couple months span. So if you're someone who really enjoys them, and maybe you have a goal of running half marathon in every state, I think there's someone on social media who's really big into that. She's like in her 20s and she's already done 48 states. It really just depends on your goals. You can do a lot of B half marathons. And so mm-hmm. you might be running like marathon pace slightly slower for some of these B races, and you can recover relatively quickly from those.
Yeah. Like you said, you know, if it takes you 2 hours or and a half or under that time, you know, there's, you can get away with doing it more frequently, like you said, as part of a training run. But I agree with you, like 2 A races for the half distance is plenty for the year. You know, and then being selective about the timing, because if you're trying to run fast, you want to pick typical, you know, good weather, good courses, that sort of thing. And then with the 5K, it's really, that's a different thing, because like you said, it's almost like you want to have one or two chances before you try to go after your fastest time, right? Because you want to get the experience. You want to, because a lot of times we don't push it that much in training, and the 5K is just a different beast. Like a lot of times, you know, we don't, you know, unless you competed in cross country in high school or college, you just don't have the experience with like pushing yourself at that level, at that pace. And so for that distance. And so it's just a good opportunity, I think, to mix it up. And you can do, you know, probably every 2 to 3 weeks, you could have a 5K for, you know, you want to probably cap it at 3 to 4 in a cycle. But that's about the max that I would do. And then if you take some time off or whatever, you can go back to doing another 5K cycle, you know, the next season, I think is fine.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of really good questions this time. I know a lot of these things can be really specific when it comes to you know, answering these on a case-by-case basis. And so sometimes we make assumptions when we are talking about these questions in terms of, like, what the person's goals are and whatnot. But sometimes it's really helpful to chat with a coach and figure out what the answer would be for your specific unique situation. And maybe you have more specific questions that you want to ask. And we would love to get to know more about you and answer any questions that you have. So if you're ever interested, you can fill out the form on our website, www.runforprs.com, for a free 7-day trial working with a coach, getting all of your questions answered. Again, that's www.runforprs.com. Thanks for tuning in.